But now I can't look at a WAV file that I'm recording and not see dicks.
Episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. From San Diego, California, friend of the show, Keith Foster.
That's right.
From Los Angeles, California, I am Cassidy Robinson. And today we're going to be reviewing the sci-fi movie Arrival. And in our Netflix homework, we're going to be talking about another documentary that you recommended, Finders Keepers.
I don't know if recommend is the right word, because, like, I hadn't seen it yet. I had just, like, heard about it.
Right. But you were interested in talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was one of those ones when I, like, read the description, and I was like, have I seen this? Because have you ever done this? Have you ever gone through your Netflix and then, like, look at everything you've given a star rating? And then, because I used to do that. I don't really do it anymore. But I did that for a lot of you when I first started using Netflix. And then just look at, like, titles being like, I guess I saw that, but I couldn't tell you a single thing about it.
I think so. Well, didn't Netflix merge with that one website that, like, you could rank movies on? Didn't they, like, port over your movie ratings or something like that?
Flixster?
Yeah.
No.
Maybe
Flixster and Fandango conglomerated.
Okay.
Yeah.
I knew it, like, joined with something, because there was definitely, like, a movie-related website or something that I would look at, and I would be like, I don't remember rating all this shit. but I did rate a whole bunch of movies, like, in high school on Flixster. And I'm kind of embarrassed by the ratings I gave some things.
Right, yeah.
It was high school.
You shouldn't be too embarrassed. I mean, I think just because The Matrix is still the movie I've seen the most ever.
Okay.
Just because that 2 years, whatever it was, 99, 2000.
Yeah.
I was the exact right age for The Matrix to come out.
Yeah, yeah.
And it, you know, and it, like, maybe like people younger than us, like, can't really, like, appreciate the fact that, like, before the superhero movie boom, there really wasn't anything like that. And
yeah,
that was probably one of the closest things to, like, a good, well-done superhero movie at the time.
Yeah. I get it. I remember. I grew up with The Matrix.
I'm not, like, saying, like, I'm a Matrix apologist or anything. I think it's genuinely still a good movie. The first one, I think, still holds up just fine. But, yeah, like, just because of the age I was, I think, like, if I were to just look at which movie, like, if somebody were to crunch the numbers, which movie I have seen the most in my life, it's probably that, just because of that 2 years of, like, whatever I was, 14 and 15 years old.
I think mine's The Crow. There was a period when I, like, I watched The Crow, like once a month, pretty much. And, that was, like, the coolest movie in the world to me. And, you know, I haven't seen it in a long time. I bet I'd still like it.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen that one as well. But now, like, there's all these talks about the remake and everything that's coming out. With it's Jason Momoa. They changed that about every 12 weeks.
I also just so don't care. I mean, none of the sequels were ever good. The third one was basically direct-to-video release, wasn't it? I don't know. It was terrible. They were all terrible. I don't care. It doesn't need to happen again. It was a time capsule movie out of the 90s. It was like a 90s dark, gritty superhero action movie that I just don't think A, needs to exist now, or B, could be replicated properly now.
That's pretty much what I've said every time we cover something about it in the news. I guess, I don't know. Is it weird to not talk about that this is the first episode I've done since the election? I don't want to get into it. Like, I really don't.
Yeah, no one does. I mean, yes, it happened. That's a thing. I guess if we want to make it relevant, like we could talk about how, you know, movies might be different during the Trump administration, because, you know, who knows if there will still be movies, because we'll be, you know, under martial law and hurtling towards oblivion. Nobody cares. We're all done with it. Fuck Trump. Let's talk about some great escapist art.
Well, the only reason I wanted to bring that up really was a couple days ago on Friday. I guess it's a little more than a couple days ago now, but on Friday, I was still kind of in post-election, you know, hangover slash like malaise of, you know, depression. And there was this concert that came up that I originally like requested off because I thought I was going to go to it, and then like the tickets sold out. But then like a friend of mine was like, "Hey, somebody's giving away their tickets via Twitter. Get in contact with them really quick." And I'm like, "Okay." So I ended up like Venmoing this person money to be able to get this like one of the tickets emailed to me. And then the friend I was going to go with was like, "I can't go now, but if you want my tickets, you can take other people." Long story short, I ended up taking two of my friends to downtown LA on Friday to go see a concert by this band called Power Bottom. And they're like a queercore, like garage punk sort of thing.
All right.
And
I mean, they have a great name.
Oh, yes, they do. I'm so good that I'm surprised it wasn't taken already. But it's just like a duo, sort of like a White Stripes-y sort of drum guitar duo.
Okay.
But they wear drag, and like the lead singer looks like a glittery old Greg. And it was great. It was one of the best shows I've ever been to, largely because of the post-election politicization of the atmosphere and the zeitgeist at the moment. And it turned like, you know, this show that I'm sure has a little bit of, I mean, generally speaking, their stuff is political sort of as a default just because of the subject matter of the songs.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed especially charged, and it was like really uplifting, and it was this really just kind of amazing show.
That's awesome. I think it was the same night that all week was terrible, and I watched Bat Kid Begins. And that restored a little bit of my faith in humanity. I pretty much was like tearing up through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And mostly it was just like, you know, seeing these big groups of people be not giant monsters was just refreshing.
Right. Helping this kid like realize his last dream.
Yeah. Well, have you seen it?
No, I mean, I remember when it happened as a news event.
Sure.
Like, I remember articles and stuff about it, and I knew that they made a documentary, but
yeah, I mean, he was a Make-A-Wish kid, so that just means he had cancer, but you know, you don't have to die to get a Make-A-Wish. They just do it for kids who have, you know, like really serious illnesses that they have to battle.
Right.
So, I mean, he doesn't die. It's just, you know, really uplifting.
Spoilers.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, you could look it up. The movie's not even about that. Like, it's about his day. It's just like, it's not whether or not he makes it from cancer.
I love the idea, though, of somebody listening to this and being like, "Oh, he doesn't die? Well, fuck that." Spoiled brat. Okay, first movie of the week, or the first review we're going to talk about today is the big movie release of Denis Villeneuve's Arrival. And do you want to set that up? What happens in this movie?
Let's see if I can do this without being spoilery. I'll read right from IMDb. A linguist is recruited by the military to assist in translating alien communications. Mm-hmm. So you have Amy Adams. She's an expert linguist. Forrest Whitaker, gives her that weird Forrest Whitaker stare and takes her away.
He works for the military to some degree. We're not exactly sure. He's a colonel or something like that. And then he sort of enlists her to make first contact with these gigantic bean-shaped spacecrafts.
Thought they looked like if you shoved a squid in some Spanx.
Okay, that's
like that. That's what they look like to me.
Yes, or like a giant kidney bean, one or the other.
No, I mean they looked like a weird ham with like a hand coming out of the bottom of it.
Oh no, you're talking about the aliens themselves. I'm talking about the shapes.
Oh,
the ships,
the spaceships. Yeah,
yeah.
The spaceships look like weird skipping stones.
Right, and there's 12 that appear on the Earth out of nowhere, very suddenly, and of course, because of the nature of their mystery and being unable to make direct contact with the intelligent life that lives on them because they speak in such a advanced, strange language, it becomes sort of a political event as well as curiosity or whatever.
They land all over the world, and so, like, it's not just...
good intentions? Are they here to start war? Are they here to solve world peace? We don't know.
Yeah, and that's why Forrest Whitaker hires Amy Adams, is to figure all that stuff out.
Mm-hmm. And J-Ren, he's also in there. He's a mathematician, and him and Amy Adams kind of get buddy-buddy.
Yeah, they're friends.
Mm-hmm.
They have a good time together.
So one of the reasons I often like to talk about directors when I'm doing this show because I think I somewhat subscribe to the auteur theory. And one of the reasons I wanted to see this movie is Denis Villeneuve did a few movies recently that I really, really liked. He did that movie Prisoners. I don't know if you ever saw that with Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman and Paul Dano. And it was... kind of like a serial killer procedural thriller.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. I didn't see it.
And it was one of those things where it's really boilerplate sort of genre material, but they did it really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really surprised by it. I wasn't in love with it. I thought there was some, still had some sort of like pulpy story stuff that sort of bugged me. But I thought that generally speaking, it was much better than it should have been. And then last year, or might have been the year before.
Yeah, it was last year. Sicario,
which I loved. That ended up being one of my favorite movies of the year, and really kind of blew my mind.
Sicario was really good. And like you said, that one is sort of the same. It's like definitely a genre film just that's really, really smart and done well. And like you don't even realize it's a genre film until... The last third, basically, when you kind of know what's going on.
So I'm glad you've seen that one at least, because I feel like this movie, both tonally and both in the sense of mood and general outlook on life, seems to be pretty different for this director, seeing as, like, I think both Prisoners and Sicario are both sort of stare into the abyss sorts of movies. And this one doesn't seem that way. This one actually feels very, very optimistic.
Yes and no. I mean, this is another one of those movies that it's going to be hard to talk about without, like, spoiling shit. So... at the end, we'll have to do some real talk, some spoiler talk. But I think there is an undercurrent of pessimism in this movie. I think, there's definitely a message of like, there's definitely like, yeah, but there's sort of, you know, this. there's also sort of a problem with that straight interpretation of it.
Right. So you believe that there's, I mean, the movie has a little bit of a puzzle box structure to it.
Yeah.
And it sort of sneaks up on you because you don't know it's that type of movie until you find out it's that type of movie.
I mean, I kind of suspected from the opening bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a little bit of a prologue that sort of leads you to believe that, you know, keep your feelers out and pay close attention because stuff might mean things later.
Yeah, but it also does sneak up on you. There are some pretty cool moments that if you haven't seen the movie yet, I don't want to ruin things because I think it's a cool movie going experience.
Mm-hmm. As far as the structure goes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were some things that surprised me and, you know, caught me off guard. There were some things there.
In a lot of ways, I thought of this when my first reaction just walking out of the movie was this is the movie that Interstellar thought it was.
See, I thought it was more like a really good remake of Contact. Let's remake Contact, but let's do it in a way that's not boring and dumb and that we actually get some alien payoff.
Alien payoff might be the name of my new quiz team. I agree with that. I mean, there's a lot of Contact in Interstellar. There's a lot of things in Interstellar, as well as in this movie. I even noticed shades of Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
2001. There's a lot of Kubrick in this movie, especially visually. There's a lot, and actually, I said this I think last week when I was talking about Moonlight. Maybe he's just one of those guys now, but there's. It seems visually there's even this kind of nods to sort of Terrence Malick in the way that the shots sort of montage sometimes. And instead of Roger Deakins, who shot his last two movies beautifully, there's I need to look up the cinematographer before I talk about this. But he shoots things very differently. He doesn't keep everything in focus or deep focus. There's a lot of like racking focus, like where we'll just be extreme close-ups and everything in the back is sort of fuzzed out on purpose until he decides to reverse the focus into the background, which is a very visually different approach than Roger Deakins. And Bradford Young shot this, and I looked up his credits. He shot like Pariah and Selma. So he's a good cinematographer, but very different visually than the Deakins.
All right. I mean, I definitely noticed, I could see a visual similarity between this and some of the stuff I've seen Terrence Malick do. Especially again, kind of that opening little monologue, which all this being said, I don't know. How did you feel about the movie? What did you
my overall takeaway?
Yeah. Like what
I like it a lot. I think it's extremely ambitious on a storytelling level, especially. And I think that it is pretty boldly artsy for as wide of a release and as mainstream as they're selling it.
This movie sort of came out of nowhere. Like I just saw a trailer for it the first time, like a week ago. And then I was like, oh, this came out. All right. sure. And, you know, I went and saw it and I think it benefited from nothing coming out last week besides this.
Right.
A relative lull. And B, I actually think the election kind of played into it because people
needed the escape.
Yeah. And like we talked about earlier, it does kind of have this optimistic nature to it that I think people who see it will really appreciate that, especially, you know, coming off of
everything going on. Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. And it does seem weirdly prescient, like it's almost like it knew, but obviously it didn't.
I think it just kind of got lucky. I think that and once the studio recognized that, they started sort of plugging it a lot more.
Yeah, and it sort of becomes a zeitgeist film.
Yeah. out of nowhere. Like I said, I think this movie could have easily just been swallowed up by, you know, by the November release.
Yeah, totally. Especially with it being having such a kind of secretive marketing campaign.
Yeah, which, yeah.
There was a little bit of buzz for the movie that came out of, I think, the Toronto Film Festival. So I heard about it back then, but only just, like, a little bit. Like, people were like, oh, yeah, this is good. You should watch out for it. Amy Adams, Aliens. And then Amy when it Adams. Came out, I was like, oh, yeah, this movie's coming out. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're both going to say maybe the same thing about it. I like it a lot. It's trying a lot of different things, and and I think there is a big emotional payoff for the movie. I think for me, one of my biggest issues with it is the Amy Adams thing.
And yeah.
It's not because I think she's bad, and I think she actually plays the part as well as she is supposed to, as she's being directed to. I feel it's a little bit of overexposure for her. I think she's in far too much right now. And I feel there's every once in a while there's a little bit of a coldness to her as an actress. Not icy per se, but sort of something that doesn't totally allow me in. Like maybe it's like, you know, I'm always aware of the artifice. Like I'm always aware that, oh, this is Amy Adams playing a part. Like,
yeah,
I never like totally buy the character 100%. The best I've ever seen her, or where I totally like was able to get into her character as a character, was in Paul Thomas Anderson's The Master. That's where I thought like she really like actually like stepped up to the role. In this, I look at the role and I see like what she has to do, and I see like, you know, because there's kind of a lot there. It's a pretty meaty role because, you know, she's dealing with grief. She's dealing with relationship stuff. She's dealing with being a professional in her field and trying to be taken seriously. She's and there's like it's a very multi-layered kind of thing. And I feel like she approaches all of those aspects of her character in pretty much the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of agree. She never really does much for me in general, but I think the way you said it is pretty accurate. Like, she just never totally sucks me in. She never grabs me. It's not that she's not talented. It's not that she's a bad actress. To me, she's just sort of a placeholder. And I think I would have liked to see someone with a bit more emotional depth approach this role. I mean, she's fine. She doesn't ruin the movie.
No.
She's competent. She's, I don't think it's totally all her fault.
No.
I actually had some issues with the way this was directed. Okay. So, don't get me wrong. I really liked this movie. I think it's really smart. I think, like you said, it's ambitious. It's trying to tackle a lot. But there are some points, again, I don't want to give too much away, but there are some points where the director's purposely tricking you. And I was aware of that. And that sort of annoyed me.
You felt a little manipulated?
Yeah. Like, for example, and I don't think this is spoilery, but in just in case, I guess, I don't know, do what you have to do, listeners. But the first half of it is just sort of shot like a Cymbalta commercial. Like, you know, it's got this, you know, really foggy, muted colors. She's really playing up this sort of depression thing.
Sorrow,
and
yeah.
And I don't think that the movie totally earns that.
With her or with the tone in general?
With the tone in relation to the story they're trying to tell.
Right.
Like I said, there's some tricks at work, and once everything is sort of out in the open, I went, oh, okay. Kind of fuck you. Like,
there is sort of a twist in the movie, and it's not a Shyamalan twist. It's more like a Nolan twist. It really feels like the type of storytelling thing he would do, where he's like, "Oh, we're gonna introduce all of these flashbacks all throughout, and as the flashbacks get closer, like contractions, it's going to, you know, conceive this flip in the story."
And unlike Sicario, also has sort of a flip, a sort of a twist. Mm-hmm. To me, it felt a little more like it was just, again, once it happened, I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then immediately it was like, oh, kind of fuck you. Like, I see how you got me here. Right. You know, whereas in Sicario, I was so immersed in the story that I didn't think about it till later.
I will agree with you that because of the puzzle box nature of the screenplay, it's sort of beholden to its structure in mm-hmm. a way that Sicario isn't. Sicario has like a character dynamic flip, but it's not a everything you thought about this movie is actually not the way it is. That can rub people the wrong way sometimes. Actually, that in regards to if we're comparing it to Interstellar, I felt like that movie didn't earn it in a way that I feel like this movie does a little better. I felt like maybe this is how you feel about Arrival, but the way I felt about Interstellar was that it was so concerned with the mechanics of the mm-hmm. storytelling that I never was able to, it iced me out of all the emotional content, which it was actually trying to do, which then made it fail a little more.
Yeah. I mean, not totally. Like, I agree with you that I think this movie sort of pulls it off a little better than Interstellar does. But it was just something about it. Like, I could have used a little more levity, a little less emotional manipulation.
Right.
You know, like, you get a little bit of that with Jeremy Renner. I mean, that's what you cast Jeremy Renner for, is to, you know, lighten things a little bit. But in a very relatable, everyman, quippy sort of way. And, you know, he has a little bit of that. But I
he's pretty good in the movie, actually. I actually feel like some of the stuff, I think I know what you're saying. We'll call it the Close Encounters stuff in this movie. I wish there had been a little bit more of. Like, the stuff about them actually making contact. And at one point I thought, like, oh, that's what this movie is about. It's about mm-hmm. them trying to figure out language, and it actually has a sort of academic edge to it. And that actually, in a way that maybe, like, The Martian did last year.
Yeah, that actually brings me to another of issue I had with the movie. Mm-hmm. And I am kind of grasping at straws. Like, I guess I want people to understand I did enjoy this movie. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a really cool movie-going experience, but there were a few things that just sort of stood out to me. And one of them was the script. Some of the dialogue was a little much for me. There's some pretty cheesy stuff, especially at the end. Renner has one that I just, like, groaned at. And for a movie about language, that's kind of a problem for me. Like, the dialogue was really heady and didn't really feel real or honest. For the type of story they're trying to tell, it's really exposition heavy.
I think it kind of has to be though. Like, that's something I usually gripe about a lot. I had plenty to say about that last week with Doctor Strange, but I think this movie actually, like, in the same way with 2000 or not 2001, but with Close Encounters, so much of, like, I guess the fun of this movie, when it wants to have fun, and maybe that's an issue, is this, the nature of, like, okay, so if we're going to talk to these creatures, and then she gets to kind of play expert. And mm-hmm. that's actually, maybe it's just because I'm a big nerd, that's sort of the stuff that I was really interested in. It's like, oh, like, how would we actually go about doing this? Like, you know, because they're able to kind of write, but it's in this totally different language and this totally different script.
Yeah.
And they go over that a little bit, and then I feel like as soon as that
I wanted more of that.
Right, exactly. As soon as that starts to get interesting, and that is there is the most levity in that sequence, it kind of crests early, and then it goes into other concerns.
Yeah, I wanted a little bit more of them figuring it out. No, that was one of the parts of the movie I really enjoyed. No, I mean more like the beginning, like before Amy Adams is whisked away to meet the aliens. It's just like all the dialogue. I'm just like, ugh. Like
it's spare. It's not like dialogue that's super there to inform the character, but they're also trying to keep the character a little bit close to their chest.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like I think that is sort of what annoyed me about it. It feels a little obvious. It feels a little like, okay, you're purposely not revealing stuff. Mm-hmm. Some of this is so exposition-y to where it's a little awkward. And again, a movie that focuses on a person who her sole, study is linguistics. Mm-hmm. I was like, couldn't the script have been a little more clever? Just a little. Like, it doesn't need to be, Quentin Tarantino, snappy dialogue, but
right.
Just feel a little more human. Natural. A little more real, yeah.
Right.
And yeah. Again, these are pretty specific gripes for a movie that I overall largely liked. Enjoyed.
Yeah, I know. I'm pretty much right there with you. I really liked the ambition of it, most of all.
Yeah.
And I think that it is, it's a type of movie that most people who go to see movies at a mall are never going to see. And I appreciate that about it, is that it reaches for the stars. Literally.
I see movies in a mall.
You know what I mean. It's a large budget, highbrow art film, essentially, yeah. and in a way that very few mainstream directors are allowed to do, and in a way that very few mainstream movies do very well at in a box office sense. And this movie, is doing really well monetarily, which makes me happy. And I've had customers like ask me about it, and we've talked about it a little bit, and that's kind of cool because I feel like this, if I want to play the compare game a little bit more, some of the storytelling structure remind me a little bit of Shane Kruth's movies, specifically Upstream Color, which deals a lot in montage and flash forward and flashback and that kind of stuff. And you have to sort of piece together the script in your head as you're watching it. And that can be a huge distancer for a lot of people.
And I think overall the movie pulls it off.
Yeah. Still like I said, accessible.
There were points in the movie that I was totally sucked in and really enjoying it. And I really liked the alien design. I really liked, they really felt alien, like very strange, very, it wasn't sort of like the Star Wars cantina aliens, where it's just like a human with a weird shaped head or whatever.
Right.
They didn't resemble, anything,
Earth-like.
That felt comfortable as far as structurally. Like I said, I think they looked like a squid if you shoved it into a pair of Spanx.
Mm-hmm. I think the movie also does a really good job conveying scale. There's a monumental... Yeah. I think I saw this on one of those giant screens too, maybe on accident. But it has a monumental sort of feel to it, especially when they're approaching those ships for the first time. When we go inside the ship for the first time, that's the stuff that feels very
Kubrickian
to me.
And there's just some moments that are very simple as far as concept, like the way the gravity, is different when they enter. They dealt with that very elegantly, but in a way that felt like totally mind blowing.
Right. Yeah. It's a very simple special effect, but maybe one of my favorites I've seen in the year.
Yeah. That scene alone was just like. Like, whoa, that's cool. That's alien. That is, and so that is where I think the movie really succeeds is this mood, this atmosphere, this world that they've created.
The cinema stuff rather than the movie stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think I agree with you in that it's one of those movies. It's almost a little bit like Spielberg's AI, not in content at all, but in that it's so close to being a perfect movie that it almost disappoints you more.
Yeah, because there's just like these little things that I feel like could have been better. You know, one of them being if Amy Adams had just been replaced with Emily Blunt. but no, she had to do Girl on the Fucking Train. I just think, you know, a couple things. And yeah, it could have been, like you said, a almost perfect movie. Mm-hmm. But it felt just a little short, and that made it a little frustrating.
Yeah, I pretty much concur. I definitely suggest people see it. I definitely suggest people see it in a theater, because I think it will make the difference. Mm-hmm. And even if it doesn't totally tick all the boxes, I think it does so much right. And it's all done in good intention.
Yeah.
That I have a hard time letting those things overshadow the things that I don't like overshadowing the things that I do.
I agree with that. I can get behind that.
Cool. Well, then let's go ahead and get into the Netflix homework, which you assigned me. This is the documentary Finders Keepers, the one with the lake. It's a documentary. This is sort of one of those Stranger Than Fiction documentaries.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the people here who made the movie, Brian Carberry and Clay Tweel, sort of take a snapshot of this strange occurrence that happened in America. One of those kind of like would hit the wire on like the weird human interest pieces you would see on like HuffPo or one of those like Florida Man stories kind of things. But the basic story here is a man named Shannon Wisnant.
Wisnant.
Are they in North Carolina, I believe?
Yeah, North Carolina.
He buys a barbecue grill out of a storage shed that's been liquidated because the person who owned it was defaulting on their rent, a man named John Wood. Mm-hmm. And when he buys it, he discovers inside of it John Wood's amputated leg from when he got in an airplane accident, a small like cargo plane accident. And for some reason, he wanted to keep the leg as sort of a monument to his father who died in the crash, as well as the movie later kind of goes on into their respective personal stories and dramas. And I think it tries to sort of draw the conclusion that, you know, he's trying to hold on to a piece of himself or something to that regard, both literally and figuratively. But he kept the leg and he put it in this barbecue grill, who ends up getting sold to this Shannon Wisnant guy, who's this kind of huckster, blowhard who lives in this town, who's trying to find a quick way to make a buck any way he can. And he decides to turn it into a roadshow oddity, where he sells t-shirts and, you know, charges people, adults and children, different prices to see this human leg, which leads into this long legal battles between, you know, he said between the two over who actually has the ownership legally of this leg. And I guess it's kind of played as sort of a documentary comedy. Me and Richard actually talked about a movie, a documentary. It's very similar to this in a lot of ways, called The Final Member, about a taxidermist in Iceland who's trying to complete his penis collection and has two different buyers from two different countries who are trying to be the first human penis in his collection. I recommend seeing that one too, but they both of them kind of have the same sort of cheeky tone. And and one of the things I was a little worried about with this movie, with the first like third of it, and I think it resolves it, but I was a little worried that this was just going to be hillbilly exploitation. Like, let's look at how backwards and stupid these people are, with the banjo in the background, ding, 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 ding. And like, you know what I mean? I thought they were playing it kind of broad, and they were there. And I don't like, even if I technically agree that they that these people are not the brightest bulbs. I don't like it when I feel like people are being exploited and made fun of without them knowing what they're in.
Yeah, well, I mean, if we're going to start getting into it.
No, yeah, that, like I said, I think it resolves that in a few different ways, but go ahead. What did you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, specifically with that issue, you know, they directly show Shannon having that moment on a reality TV show where he does feel like he's being exploited and used. And I think that's a moment that really humanizes a person who they up to that point didn't make look the best.
No.
He's definitely the sort of the heel of the movie. Because, you know, he's trying to be exploit this weird thing that he found. And one of the things that amused me was that he wasn't charging people to look at the leg. He was charging people to look at the grill where he found the leg because he had already lost possession of the leg at that point.
For a long time, yeah.
Yeah, and nobody wanted to just, like, see this empty stupid grill. Empty barbecue because, you know, it's just an empty barbecue. Like, and we were talking about it, me and my wife Ashley were talking about it over the weekend, and it was like, if somebody had a leg in a barbecue, yeah, I'd pay a dollar to see that. If somebody just has a barbecue where they said they had a leg, no dollar, dude. Sorry.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd want to see either, to be totally honest.
Oh, yeah. When they actually finally show the leg, it is gnarly. It is gross.
Yeah, it's a full-on, like, mummified leg.
Yeah, and it's like, And some of the, like, when he describes picking up the leg for the first time and all the cholesterol leaking out of it, that was really gross.
This is also one of those, it's one of those, truth is stranger than fiction, but it's also one of those, it just keeps getting weirder and weirder and weirder. Like, the story just, like, it almost a little bit like, Errol Morris's Tabloid in that way. Like, just when you think things were as weird as it goes another level. Especially with the Shannon character, who ends up, like, edging his way into Jerry Springer, into this, like, trash pickers, like, reality.
What was it called? Dukes of Haggle.
Yeah, that's
Dukes
right.
of Haggle. yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. Like, I think it would have been very easy for the movie to just sort of make fun of these people because it's so dumb. You know, like, they're fighting over this leg. Who does the leg actually belong to? Well, it's actually John's leg. Like, it was part of his body.
Right.
But, you know, there's the legal issue of technically Shannon bought it, but he didn't buy it. He bought the barbecue. He didn't know there was a leg in it. It's a whole thing. But yeah, I think it would be really easy for the movie to just sort of make fun of them. And I actually appreciated that it didn't. Like, I didn't think it totally did that. Like, John, they do I thought they did a good job of making his story feel like it was more than about more than just a leg. Like, you know, it was this weird memorial to his dad. He didn't want to exploit the leg, but he got sort of sucked along on this weird media frenzy. He was, you know, really horribly addicted to drugs. And the strain that put on him and his family. Like, I actually thought this documentary is being about such a weird, quirky story, had a lot of heart. And kind of the same with Shannon, you know, they kind of equate him finding this leg to his father issues too. Like, they both have some deep-seated dad stuff going on that I thought was pretty sad. Like, Shannon could have just been an asshole, you know, a blowhard and an asshole, but I kind of was feeling for him and just his complete lack of self-awareness.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can't help but laugh, like when he was in the fucking barber, and he's just like, yeah, I'm basically like Eddie Murphy raw and other things. Like, those are my big comedy influences. I'm like, dude, you're a giant white man from North Carolina. You're about as far from Eddie Murphy raw as it gets.
I thought that was kind of funny, too. I agree with you that the movie pays some amount of lip service to their backstories and stuff to try to inject a story element into this, what would normally just be sort of a weird news item.
Yeah.
And I think it does that pretty well. I sometimes think some of that stuff's a little on the nose, and sometimes the interviews with their documentary subjects will have them explicitly say the subtext that they're trying to lay out. And I, even though it's an interview, I wonder, like, did they feed him that line? Mm-hmm. Because it's just a little too convenient that they're saying the exact thing, like, the leg is actually maybe, you know, this has to do with my father and how I always never got acceptance from him and all this stuff. And some of that stuff, I was like, I got that. I was there already. You didn't need to lay that out for me, but
yeah, I can see that. I agree with that assessment. There was some,
it got a little on the nose every once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think part of the problem was that this documentary is done almost entirely through interview. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, some documentaries can show you a little more footage, but obviously they weren't aware of this story early enough to make a documentary about it at the time.
Right. It's a little after the fact.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have old, like, newsreel footage and, well, not newsreel, but like, a Live on Five kind of news footage or whatever. And if when some of the interviews they've done with this celebrity or that celebrity, or when they were on Judge Mathis and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So there is other, like, archival footage, but.
Yeah, but that was a little light. Yeah, and like some of it, you know, all we had to take was John and Shannon's word for it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they sort of, like I said, early on set it up to be pretty obvious whose side you're going to be on. Mm-hmm. So you can definitely see the documentary filmmakers pulling the strings a little bit.
Yeah, there's a construction of a narrative.
Yeah,
that's being played, but that's what a documentary is. Documentary isn't news. Documentary is either a story in this case, or it's an argument, like an essay.
Yeah, and I think in this case, you know, they definitely kind of needed to lay out some of that stuff, just because. I don't think either narrator would have been sophisticated enough to tell the story on their own. Mm-hmm. At least not in a way that's, you know, really reliable.
I don't think I would want like a third party entry into this story, like a Michael Moore or a what's his name who did Supersize Me?
Or like a
Louis Theroux or somebody like that who's like your guest host into the world. And then I think that exploitation vibe would come off even more so.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's better to let them just kind of tell their own stories. And maybe this is stylistically on purpose. I'm not sure. But there is almost sort of a reality TV vibe to the movie. Like, they're like in the way some of the scenes are cut, in the way, like, the music choices, like I said, like the banjo in the background, then sometimes it'll go into like, oh, this is a reflective scene, so now it'll get, the music will turn sad. Reminded me a little bit of like a TLC special writ large.
But with
maybe just like a little bit more of a sense of content to it.
A sense of purpose. I think they kind of I think that's relevant again with the character of Shannon, just because that was his sort of goal, is to be this reality TV star. And I looked him up on Twitter just because I was curious.
Yeah.
Like he's pretty fascinating to me.
Is his Twitter handle @Legman?
It is. It really is. It's @LegmanNC. So, you know, for North Carolina.
Right.
And all he does on Twitter is he thanks people who follows him. He just goes, "Oh, thanks for the follow. You have a blessed day." Like, that's all he tweets. Which again, kind of plays in, you know, like into his sort of lack of self-awareness, you know, like,
and his obsession with being liked and being famous.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought he was fascinating. He sort of reminded me, in general, this movie sort of reminded me of The King of Kong, mm-hmm. A Fistful of Quarters.
Yeah, I thought about just, that one too.
You know, it's this quirky subject matter. You have this sort of larger than life villain, and, you know, this sort of down to earth. Well, I don't know how down to earth John is. He's, you know, he's a fucking
comparatively down to earth.
Lived under a bridge. but yeah, you know, they definitely set it up as this sort of like hero versus this almost cartoonish villain. Mm-hmm. I think King of Kong makes the antagonist look a little less redeemable than this does to Shannon, but
right, and I think King of Kong, there's that extra layer. Yes, it's a hero villain story, but there's also this kind of look into this world of video gaming experts or whatever, like competitive arcading. So there's a little bit of sort of a peek into another world you're not familiar with. Whereas this one, the world stuff is a little more familiar because of the reality TV stuff that's mm-hmm. been out for a while, or if you just happen to be from there, or places that might as well be there. So I think it doesn't quite have that extra layer of entertainment value. But I did like it, and I thought it was funny, and I think that it accomplishes what it sets out to do story wise. But yeah, I don't know. It feels it's a little, I would say, fluffy.
Mm-hmm.
Even in this genre, the truth is stranger in fiction documentary genre, I think, like, the final member, and maybe if I had not just seen that movie somewhat recently ago, I would feel differently about this. But I think that's a movie that does a lot of this a little better. But no, I enjoyed it. And I'd say that if you like these kinds of documentaries, or, you know, if you don't just like watching documentaries about, like, starvation in Darfur, you know, there are other documentary genres out there.
I actually do appreciate that, because I have a tendency to, you know, when I watch documentaries, I usually get very pissed off and mm-hmm. very sort of passionate about whatever it is.
Right.
And so I actually enjoy, because, you know, documentaries can be really funny and really fun. And mm-hmm. I think this one is definitely entertaining. You know, I mentioned earlier, Bat Kid Begins, kind of the same thing, you know, just sort of lighthearted. I don't mind that it's fluffy. I think there's enough layer, you know, like, again, with the weird parallels with their father issues. I think there is enough subtext to make it worth your while.
All right. Well, next week, we're going to have you back on to talk about
Fantastic Beasts and Where You Find Them.
Yes. And for our Netflix homework, we're going to review the 1994 Oscar-nominated film Quiz Show, which cool. I remember that year, me and you used to watch old episodes of SNL, and there was an episode mm-hmm. where they had John Turturro on, and the whole opening monologue was this quiz show parody, because that's what he was there to promote. And it just, like, made no fucking sense to me, because I had no idea about this movie. So I was like, okay, I guess this is kind of weird. And then later when I found out that he was actually promoting a specific film and then I went back and watched the movie, it all made sense then. But so that's
all right.
That's what we're going to talk about. What? Where can people find you? What do you have coming up? What do you want people to click on?
You can always follow me on Twitter at Keith Foster Kid. Tonight in San Diego is back. We're not in hiatus anymore. We just released episode 91 online. You can check it out on Facebook. You can check it out on YouTube. Tonight in San Diego. Go to our website, tonightinsandiego.com. We do, if you're in the San Diego area, we do live tapings on Mondays at 7:30. You can get your tickets at tonightinsandiego.com if you want to come to a live taping of a late night talk show. It's pretty fun. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the writers and I'm the co-host of that. Episode 91's out. We just filmed episode 92 last night. And then we only have 5 more, I think, to get us through the end of the year. So come check it out and click on our videos. And you can always find me on Facebook, too.
You want people to go there. See, that's the I share like publicly my Twitter, which is at BC Cassidy, and mm-hmm. our show's Twitter at Jabber Podcast. But I'm not one of those people where I need to have strangers like me on Facebook.
It's mostly because I do live performances, and the easiest way to see those is for me to just share them on Facebook. Because I really should probably have like a
fan page,
a performer page. Yeah.
Yeah.
But right now you can just, I guess, I don't know if you want to follow me on Facebook. That's cool. I have a show that I'm doing a stand-up comedy for. I believe it is Saturday, November 26th. I'm going to be doing a stand-up comedy show for Movember. It's free show. There's a suggested donation that goes to prostate cancer. But you don't have to pay anything. But if you want, all the money goes to prostate cancer research.
Where's the show?
It's going to be at Bare Roots Brewery up in Vista, California, on November 26th. I don't know what time, but it'll probably be in the evening. I'm guessing like around 7.
Okay.
And it's going to be a cool show.
Right, and it'll probably be on the venue's webpage.
Maybe. I'll share it on Facebook, so.
Cool. Well, if anybody has anything they want to say about anything we talked about on the show, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/JabberPodcast, or you could send us an email at jabberonthedrone@gmail.com. You can also find the archives for the show and all of our past episodes at jabberonthedrone.podbean.com, and you can download us and stream us at Stitcher, iTunes, Player.fm, Pocket Cast, and the Windows Podcast Network. I think we're on Google Play, but I'm not sure. I have to download it on my phone first and see if it got uploaded. You can read my weekly movie reviews that I do for the Idaho State Journal at southforkreviews.blogspot.com. I also have some other reviews and content at the Seattle-based mcguff.in/author/Cassidy. Friend of the show, Brad Decker, is still updating his entertainment/arts and literature/film blog, panelandframe.com. And check out friends of the show, Rod and Denise, at their music request podcast, The Listening Party, which I just released an episode today. They record twice a month. And last week we had Patrick from Make Dad Read Comics and Almost Educational, his two podcasts. And I highly recommend that you go listen to those. Thanks for coming on the show, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sign out, tagline.
Bye.